Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is incredibly important in that war, of course, that the United States be prepared to contend with what might be thrown at it in various ways, of course, not least of which, though, is the old-fashioned, kinetic kind of war. There are a few people I know in Washington, D.C. these days who have thought harder about it and longer and with greater effect than our guest for this full hour of detailed conversation about the condition of the United States military than Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, United States Marine Corps retired, these days a senior research fellow for defense programs and the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation. He is the lead author of an absolutely indispensable new book. It is titled The 2018 Index of U.S. Military Strength. It is a team effort by he and his colleagues at the Heritage Foundation, but it is an indispensable resource for us as we try to make sense of where we actually are at the moment in terms of our military readiness and capabilities. Dakota Wood, it is so good to have you with us, sir. Thank you very much for your lengthy and distinguished service in the United States Marine Corps and for your continuing service to the country at the Heritage Foundation. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. I mean, it's always a pleasure to be with you and, you know, you leading the way as well, you know, in addressing challenges to, you know, our country and our security interests. And you know, I think getting the word out on these matters to the American public is just an essential service, and happy to be part of that effort.
Well, it is an essential in the sense particularly that there won't be any national security if the American people don't understand the need for it and support what it takes to have it. So, with all of that as background, Dakota, let's talk a little bit about the new book and sort of your overall assessment of where we are, and then we'll drill down on the component parts of our national military power and how we're faring. But just in terms of a score, I guess, how would you assign the condition of our military strength at the moment?
Right. Well, we gave it a C. I mean, it's a score on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being very weak and a 5 being very strong. We rate the current U.S. military in a marginal or a 3 or a C grade status at the moment. So just cutting to the chase, we believe it could handle one major regional conflict, you know, a war in Europe or the Korean Peninsula or something like that, but it would have to globally source the entirety of U.S. military capabilities as they currently stand to go fight that one fight. And that means that you wouldn't have anything left over to handle something in any other region. So I think we're right there on the cusp of meeting U.S. national security interests in a single major theater. But unfortunately, the trends are in a downward slope. So our capabilities continue to erode while we have these budget problems and lack of prioritization on defending our country and its interests.
This is where we want to go next. But just before we do, Dakota, again, as a serious student of these matters, as well as a practitioner, it's important to calibrate where that sort of measure puts us relative to our historic assessment of what the United States military needed to be able to contend with. I remember back in the day when we used to talk about being able to fight simultaneously two major conflicts, regional or otherwise. Those are the good old days and long in the rearview mirror at the moment. But how did we get from that to where we are at the moment?
Any discussion of military power absent context is kind of just a waste of time, right? So it's, you know, military power to do what, against whom, and where. And so that's what we try to provide in this index, is that larger context, historically, the nature of the threat environment and what it has really taken historically to resolve conflicts on favorable terms, you know, in our interest. So in the good old days, you know, as you say, them during the Cold War, we did. We maintained a very large military because we had to confront the Soviet Union, largely in Europe and in the North Atlantic area. But the Soviet Union also had a global presence. And then you had other contending manifestations of communism, whether it was in the People's Republic of China or on the, you know, the Vietnam conflict during the 1960s and early 70s. So the United States felt that it had to have the resources to be able to deal with the Soviet Union challenge in the North Atlantic and in the European theater, and still have additional capabilities to handle something like a Korea, a Vietnam, a Desert Storm, which occurred in the Middle East, continuing presence missions, being there alongside allies like Japan or South Korea, you know, outside of a wartime framework, being able to handle emerging issues in Africa or in Latin America, right? So it was a global contest, a global presence, and that two-war construct helped force sizing discussions about the ability to be able to do those multiple things. So how we got to where we're at now, Cold War ends in the early 1990s, 92 with the dissolution of the Soviet Union, and we had the happy decade of the 1990s. So almost no aircraft procurement, dramatic reduction in the size of the U.S. military forces because, you know, the old bogey of the Soviet Union was gone. Russia was back on its haunches, you know, just kind of prostrate there economically, didn't really know what its future was going to hold. China had not yet risen, and we certainly didn't have things like the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda as we found them to be in 2001. So that dramatic reduction,
the so-called peace dividend, as it was known at the time, as I recall.
Absolutely, the peace dividend. And so when that goes away, and not just for 6 months or a year, but for a decade, you know, the wake-up call was 9/11. Oh, there are bad guys out there. When it goes away for such a long period of time, people tend to forget why we needed to have a military of a certain size dealing with the world as big as it is and its variations in terms of different types of competitors. So the big change that has occurred is the single capital in Moscow. So we would have something that was going on undersea or on the surface in the Pacific or the Mediterranean or the Atlantic Ocean. And this contest, you know, bumping incidents, aircraft interceptions, etc., all those signals would go back to a single capital there in Moscow. So the Soviet Union goes away, but what happened in the decade or 15 years after that is multiple capitals became important. So now we have to deal with Tehran there in Iran. You have to deal with Beijing. You know, China has found its footing economically, much more aggressive in expansionist power. We have to deal with a nuclear-armed North Korea now, and then resurgent Russia. So you have four major capitals, and you also have the manifestation of terrorism across North Africa, the Middle East, here at home, all the migration that's occurred up into Europe, and manifestations of terrorism there as well. So it's a much more complicated world with different capitals that really don't care what goes on in another region. So Ukraine is invaded by Russia, or Russia is being very provocative in the Baltic Sea, and we respond to that in some way. Beijing really doesn't care what's happening or the signals that are being sent. They're going to build islands in the middle of the South China Sea. And the same thing occurs with North Korea or Iran. So you still have a very large world. It's more complicated now with many more actors able to present military threats and challenge U.S. security interests. And yet the military we have is at least two-thirds, in some cases half, of what we had to use during those areas, that period of the Cold War. So a dramatic reduction in capacity, aging equipment, but the world doesn't stand still, much more complicated and threatening in many different ways, and we are ill-postured to be able to deal with that.
We're going to drill down now on various aspects of what that cumulative history has wrought with our military. I just wanted to transition by saying you have spent a lot of time, notably in the Marine Corps and now at the Heritage Foundation, Dakota Wood, thinking about how you make these various challenges more tractable given the forces that we have at our disposal. And Korea comes to mind. You mentioned it as one of the countries that we're currently wrestling with. It was a wake-up call back in the early 1950s when suddenly we realized that you could have a terrible war there while you're trying to hold the line in Europe. And we have, I'm afraid, forgotten that hard-learned lesson. We'll talk with Dakota Wood of the Heritage Foundation about that and much more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.